morning, Linda. I see another wicket.
Yeah, you can put it right here.
If not, we're just going to have to run over to probably tomorrow afternoon. As you know, we have just finished the water board. So the next phase of our work, that is to deal with all the entities that are attached to the department that fall under. This is a big job. Each entity on its own, of course, has its own strategic plan, corporate matters, financial statement, its budget, its priority. Like dealing with a separate department. I've also been a little bit shocked to hear that the financial statements of the water board are not processed by SCOBA. I'm not sure. Do the entities appear before SCOPA? Mm-hmm. All of you? Mm-hmm. There should be reports from SCOPA. Mm-hmm. From the last meeting that you were before SCOPA. Mm-hmm. So SCOPA is the standing committee on public accounts. Do you appear in front of them? Sandy. Does Sandy appear in front of the
committee? Only when the president's here and there's no question
around it. See, these things worry me terribly. I really am worried about it. There's a whole part of the department's work, the water board and the entity, that just doesn't go to scope. But it's not your problem, it's our problem. I'll check out what's going on. Does that apply to all the entities? So I can do it, look at all the entities' problems. Okay. So our program is, we've been given permission, particularly now during the EPCs, to sit on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Of course, it's a great difficulty getting people on Friday. Everyone's here. But at this stage, we are meeting today the whole day and tomorrow the whole day. If it's necessary, if we can finish today, then we'll at least sit tomorrow morning. If we can't, then whatever is not finished, we'll have our own tomorrow. That will mean that we will finish all the entities that fall under the Department of Environmental Affairs. And then next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we deal with the entities that fall under the Water Board. Today we were Sandy, Sand Park, Mangaliso, East Mangaliso, and the Weather Service. Tomorrow we were the two corporate entities, Kulisa Ibag and Ndalo, which I see we've got no documentation on. It's a company, but it's very slow in giving us documents. Should be wound up. That's the Department of Environment, and then next week we deal with water affairs on the Tuesday with Water Research Commission, Trans Caledon, and COBA. And then with the two catchment management agencies of Berg Water and Kumati. So that's next week. The week after, we had a short meeting with the Ministerial Water Advisory Council. This is apparently a new structure. I met them at this dinner the other night. Apparently it's a new structure that gives the minister advice around water matters. That will only be half the morning. And if any of these issues from the entity stand over, we've got the Wednesday to finalize that. And then the week after that, the 21st and the 22nd, we are dealing with the asset mine drainage report. We'll first start with the department coming to and the expert coming to tell us what's in the report. We'll then engage the report. Then, of course, we want the department to explain to us what it is they're going to do to sort out the problem. That's the Tuesday and the Wednesday. And then the next Tuesday for the whole day, we'll be calling the mines that are affected to come and tell us why they're not doing what they should be doing. So the owners and the Chamber of Mines will be on the 28th. And then on the 29th, both departments must come and tell us what they're doing around the Millennium Development Building. So that's our program for this whole term. And then, as you know, the recess, after the recess, there's 3 or 4 weeks of committees. I'm busy dealing with a program there already. One of those weeks I probably want to take for oversight work. So if any members have any ideas around what oversight work we should be doing, please let me know in the next day or two. We'll finalize that. That's our program. So Leka will just finalize the little things and then hand it out to you so you have it more. But basically, we meet on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We have the two departments. And at this stage, remember, any meetings on Fridays, yes, there's nothing that isn't going to come up. And the program is the entities, the asset mine drainage, and the Millennium Development Goals for this term. Okay? Obviously, any input you have, I would welcome. All right. Let's now start with our work for this week. We have Sandy, then Sandmark, then Spangaliso, and for weather services last. We should be having a strategic plan, an annual report, and at least financial statements from each, and then of course we've been given an input which they will be given then. Obviously, this is the driving chair, except for the weather service, my first engagement as chair with the entity. I want to start a process whereby you're going to be vigorously engaged each year, at least in the beginning of the year, and possibly later in the year if there's an necessity. We hope to do our oversight as vigorously as we can to make sure that firstly your programs are what they should be. Secondly, that you are performing them correctly, implementing them correctly. Thirdly, that of course the money that you're given is spent properly. And in some instances, we also will be looking at the advisability and the viability of the entity. And its mandate. Obviously, this won't happen overnight. It's a process. I feel it's a process over the next 3 or 4 years that will hopefully perfect by the time that this committee mandate ends. But I do want to say that this is going to be a period of a much more rigorous engagement. I, for example, are very strongly engaged with SCOPA to see why the financial statements of these entities, which form a big part of this department, are not being looked at, engaged with by Parliament. Clearly, the expertise around those matters are situated in SCOPA. They're not situated in the committees themselves, like our committee. the process that we follow is to give each entity 20 minutes to present. I would suggest that when you give your inputs, you know, we're not interested in long histories and that. What we're interested in really is to see what your strategic plan is, the finances you have executed, how you spend your money in the previous year. In other words, to what extent the Auditor General has done right or wrong with your work as far as finance are concerned. And then obviously seeing, you know, where you're going. So please, in your inputs, try and concentrate on those matters. I'm sure that if you have projects, you must deal with them briefly. If there's a need to engage with the members, we'll engage with you. And, you know, we can be strict with you with 20 minutes, but please be frugal with your time. Sandy, where are we? Dr. Abrams, Abramson.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning,
Andy.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Tanya Abramson. I'm the CEO of the South African National Biodiversity Institute. The content of my
I also understand that there are some officials here from the National Treasury and the AG. Good morning, thank you for being here. You know that I like having you here when we deal with these things, so if there are issues to be dealt with, that we can deal with them directly. But thanks a lot for being here.
Apologies, Chair. I actually, this is the presentation that I submitted 2 weeks ago that I actually improved advice with your pictures and things like that. That's what might be interesting for the portfolio committee, but I will proceed. The content of this presentation is to talk a little bit about the strategic plan and also to bring the attention of the portfolio committee the new rules and ways in National Treasury have guided us in developing the strategic plan, and then to have a strategic overview and talk about our goals and our key programs, and to talk about the summary of the programs and our priority areas for 2011-12. And then my colleague, Moitesi Kwakwe, will take you through the finances. So the outline of the strategic plan, as you might know, we've moved from a 3-year to a 5-year planning cycle using the new Treasury guidelines, and it's in 3 parts. Part A is a strategic overview, and it has a vision and mission and values, and then request legislative and other mandates, and expect us to do a situational analysis the organizational environment, the performance environment, the description of the strategic planning process, and the goals of the programs that we highlight to achieve our strategic plan. Part B focuses on more detail around the programs, including the strategic objectives, the resource considerations, and the risk management plan. And Part C asks us to look at links to other long-term plans, such as infrastructure and capital plans of government, and also requests us to do a risk management plan, and we submit that all under the new guidelines. So the strategic overview of Sandy is our vision, which is the biodiversity richness for all South Africans, and our mission, which is to champion the exploration, conservation, and sustainable use, and appreciation and enjoyment of South Africa's exceptionally rich biodiversity for all people. And our values are guided by organizational values, which spell out UGRE.
I think we've got those.
You've got those. Can I get that? For Sandy UGRE. So our strategic goal. Our goal is to harness South Africa's biodiversity capacity and to be recognized as the first call for knowledge, information, and policy and advice on biodiversity for South Africa and the region. And we achieve this through 7 programs with a number of strategic objectives. The first program is really about our conducting research, monitoring, and assessment and understanding of biodiversity and the effects on biodiversity, the impacts of biodiversity, particularly climate change. Our second program is a key program. Part of our expanded mandate is to coordinate biodiversity information management and access, and to be the national one-stop shop for biodiversity, both for scientists as well as citizens and everything in between. Our program number 3 is a program and project for protecting and restoring and reducing loss of natural habitat in identified threatened biomes and ecosystems. We work together with the department and get agreement through the system about what are the threatened biomes and ecosystems. And as many of my colleagues on the Portfolio Committee would know, that some of the key ones are the Fynbos, the grasslands, the Southlands, Peru, etc. We provide in our program 4 science-based policy advice, not only on environmental policy and legislation, but also on any legislation that might have impact on biodiversity and environment. And we provide advice to the states and to the departments on that. Program number 5 is the area that we are often known for. We manage a network of conservation gardens, the Natural Botanical Garden System, of which Kirstenbosch and Pretoria and Wolfisulu are 3 of the 9 Natural Botanical Gardens that we manage. We also drive the human capital development, education and awareness in response to our mandate. And program number 7 is the systems and processes and governance we manage to support the achievement of our mandate. So program 1, and what I've done here is in green share, is just to highlight the priorities, because there are rather a lot. So the strategic objective of the program 1, which is around research and monitoring. The first strategic objective is to provide a coordinated framework for biodiversity research. And you might or might not know this, honorable members, that biodiversity research sits in many, many institutions, in universities, etc. And our role is really to get everybody to sing on the same song sheet about what are the priority research areas for biodiversity and biodiversity conservation. So even though this is a one-liner in to draft a national biodiversity research strategy for DIA, it's actually a very important exercise for coordinating and harnessing the capacities of what is a developing country towards better biodiversity research, more focused biodiversity research, research that will have value for the country and its goals. The second objective is the work that we do with climate change. as you might know, we are the authors of the second national communication on climate change, the impact and adaptation that will be needed for human beings to thrive and survive under a climate change situation. We did that last year. This year, we are going to deepen the work by looking at key ecosystems and biota, species and processes that were identified in the climate change research, and develop information and advisory tools for each of the biomes under threat and the vulnerabilities that they have in the face of climate change. Objective number three is the Science Foundation, and I highlighted one of the priorities as an indicator of our targets, and we aim to have at least 40 papers in peer-reviewed international ISI journals in the coming year. Program one continuing, we want to strengthen the feedback to policy and decision-making through monitoring and assessment, and we will be developing national biodiversity indicators. As you might know, the Convention on Biological Diversity that happened in 2010 really strengthened and assisted in the idea of what kind of indicators is needed, and we have been actually working with CBD and one of the leaders in looking at natural biodiversity indicators. So that will be very important for us. The other area that we work in as part of working in all impacts that impact on biodiversity is a very controversial area, which is the GMO. We have delivered the first work on GMOs in 2010, and we will be working further, particularly on BT maize insect-resistant GMOs. And our major aim is to identify impacts, negative and positive impacts of GMOs in the environment to biodiversity, and report that to the department. We will have develop a monitoring framework for species in trade, and look at least 60 threatened taxa and monitor it, and we will develop the first bird atlas project in this coming year. The fifth strategic objective under program one is listed there. Some interesting ones. You will also note, Chair, that from originally what was a botanical institute to moving towards a biodiversity institute, we really are focusing now on non-plant species and working on those areas, as well as looking at two key biomes and their priorities, taxa and species. Program two, which is around information management, this is a very exciting area, and some of the product that we produce in this area is considered to be world best practice. Our major aim is to make biodiversity information accessible to all decision makers and students and professors, and we are growing every day in the amount of data that we have in the system. And I would really ask you all to go and look at the Biodiversity Advisor, which we informed you about last time, which has grown enormously. One of the really good things we've done is to take all the EIA data. You would note, Chair, that the EIA actually produced enormous amounts of information that often gets lost. And so what happens is consultants come back and get repaid to redo things that have been done. What our main aim is to create efficiencies in the system and put all the EIA data onto the biodiversity advisor so you don't really have to start again. So we will continue with the primary biodiversity data collected and collated. As you also know, we manage the herbaria for the nation, the national herbaria, some of which have been around for 150 years. With our new mandate, we are also obligated to have oversight around non-plant specimens, and they are scattered in some 35 institutions, some at local government, and some at national, and some at provincial, and in many departments. So that's an area that we are tackling this year, the collections and for mobilizing the data and continue to rebuild the capacity for biodiversity information, which is enormous. It's an enormously important facility to have in order to give access to more people than just the scientists. And so we really have put lots of energy into that, and we will continue to do that. Program 3 is a coordinated program for protecting and restoring habitat loss, and we work in the grassland program, for example, in the same box program, but we are prioritizing the grasslands area. As you know, grasslands is enormously rich in biodiversity, and there are much pressure on it, mining, agriculture, etc., pressure on it. And so we will be finalizing the strategies and actually getting them approved, both the grasslands and the freshwater. There are many other priorities in this area, but I just chose the one that I thought stood out. We also want to pilot innovative approaches for reducing habitat loss, and particularly in the area that we hadn't focused on previously, which is the forestry sector. And as you know, this is the year of the forest, the International Year of the Forest. So we're working both at an institutional level, at private sector level, and at small growers level. And we hope to expand the conservation estate of the country by at least 20 hectares this coming year. Program C3 continues. We want to draft the bioregional plan for the Gert, Sebande, and the Gauteng metros, and have two additional biodiversity sector plans developed, and hold a number of training sessions at four environmental authorities and service providers, particularly at municipal level, okay, where we really, it's part of our mainstream income, we really feel it is where the rubber hits the road, is where is municipal management and municipal capacity. On our ecosystem rehabilitation, we hope to have 95 wetlands rehabilitated and employ those number of people and provide that number of training days. And very interestingly, the fifth objective in the program 3 is working together with SEER on making the case, and this is where my pictures are missing, and I hope that I will want to show you some pictures about making the case. Making the case for biodiversity and making the link between biodiversity and development and economy and social development growth. And we've been working on this with the Department of Environment Affairs, and very interesting information has come out of that exercise, and we want to ensure that everybody understands, and we definitely want to come back to you, Chair, and have a special session with the Portfolio Committee on making the case for biodiversity. Program 4, which is the science-based information, and just I'll leave this as a list on some of the policy advice that we have been giving and that we hope to give. The threat and terrestrial ecosystems to be finalized, the norms and standards for biodiversity management plans, the engagement with COP17, UNFCCC, of which we are engaged at quite a high level in the negotiations, and to draft a natural plant strategy for conservation strategy for deer. Program 4 continues. I think in this slide, the one that's the most standout one would be that we will be producing the first State of Biodiversity Monitoring Report for the Minister as per NEMBA. And I want to also point you towards the freshwater ecosystem protected area work that we have been doing, and we want the assets to be published for public consumption and for better decision making going forward. As you might know, we are also responsible for the scientific authority, which is part of the CITES legislation, and we want to have at least two meetings of the scientific authority. We bring together key experts in the scientific authority And we do research to find non-detrimental findings in priority species in Pisces. Then program 5, which is really our gardens area, you will know that we are manage 9 gardens, and in this particular financial year we will be launching the 10th in the Eastern Cape. The site has been decided. It's Kwelaka Nature Reserve. We will be doing it jointly with the Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism, which I think is a better use of state money than to actually buy land. And it is an area of endemism and of unique species on that coast, including some of the coastal forests. And we obviously use the gardens as platforms for biodiversity, for education, for religion, for leisure, for pleasure, for tourism, and we have a garden conservation program developed, which we will roll out in the coming year, and we also hope to increase our revenue very slightly, although, Chair, we want to just point out that we really do feel that we are obligated to extract as much value as we can from these state assets, but in the end, it is for the public good. And we don't have any beds or anything like Sandcock, we are David's system. Program 6, which is around human capital development, this is a part of our mandate, and it has been a very interesting ride indeed in talking with many, many institutions and getting a sense of what are the biodiversity human capital development needs for the state, and this we work together for the country. This is we work together with our sister organizations like Sandcock, and we have developed a draft strategy of which we are speaking with Education Department and our Department of Environment Affairs to really ensure that we've got the skills and capacities to manage the sector when we all retire. Ongoing is the work we do on education and working with the curriculum, and that we use our gardens for programs. We aim to increase new schools participating in gardens programs, and also to continue with our outreach greening strategy and raise awareness through various programs. Program 7 is really the backbone of the organization. Of that, like many institutions, research institutions, we constantly have to have a strategy that attracts and retains our biodiversity professionals. We have gone through a sustainable transformation process in the last 2 years, and now have an action plan and aim to implement it this year. We aim to have a clean, unqualified audit and to implement and further strengthen our monitoring and evaluation system to improve our marketing and communication, particularly for our gardens marketing. And I think 7.8 is an interesting one, Chair. We manage a lot of information, and there has been a bandwidth issue in South Africa in general, and particularly in an organization like us, which has got financial constraints. So one of the cooperative things we did was to talk with Sandlin, which is an institution managed by the DSP, and we've become part of their group. And so, in fact, our bandwidth constraints have been enormously improved. We didn't go it alone. We rather went where there was already investment in. What I did not, what I was not able to tell you very briefly, and I wanted to put it as a highlight in this presentation, was that we have for the first time had winter concerts in the Pretoria Garden. On Sunday, Lira, people in Cape Town are used to this. We are not in the north, but we had Lira at our garden, and for the first time really had increase in black participants in our garden, which is one of our aims in increasing our increasing the participation in our garden. The other thing I wanted to tell you, Chair, was that we won gold at Chelsea, which was great, considering that we actually were not going to be able to fund it due to our financial constraints. But funders stepped up to the plate. The other area I wanted to the other matter I wanted to give you more information was on making the case. And also to tell you that Sandy has been invited and we've signed the MOU with the CBD. We're the first African institution to be invited by the CBD to be a collaborating scientific institution. So I think there's a feather in South Africa's cap. And that we have had historic underfunding, a mandate expansion, growth in gardens, and increase in expertise in what is an ever-changing field. We've approached the department and the National Treasury to relook at our MTS funding, and we continue to manage in a tight financial environment. And that finally, to tell you about some of the opportunities that are coming onto the horizon, our engagement with green jobs, and we intend to put a proposal to the Jobs Fund around green jobs, and I was going to tell you a little bit more about our thinkings on that. And we've also been asked to apply to be the national implementing entity of the Global Adaptation Fund, which is part of the climate change set of institutions. And I'd like my colleague Mukesi Kwasi, the CFO, to give the finances. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Judy, and honorable members. When we circulated the presentation, we have not yet finalized our numbers, so I will talk to the latest figures, Chair, as we go through. We were going to look
at... Don't we have the latest figures?
We circulated printout, the latest...
You've given it to us?
The handout, yes, Chair.
Which one?
So on the highlights and the updated figures on page 2 of the slide, the on own income, which is the money that is generated, I'm still on the slide, Chair. We will talk the two documents together. Own income is made up of investment income, the sales, and the admission fees, which is basically money that you collect when people come into the garden for various events, most of which is basically for people visiting the garden. And then we also...
computer. I'm not sure which page is speaking to. Page I've got, the first page says assets and then current assets. Is that the page?
Yeah, this is the actual financials, Chair, and then there was also a presentation. Maybe I should just talk to the financials and do the presentation out. Because,
I don't know what you're talking to. I mean, you're talking things like, if I can't follow it, I don't...
Can you just stick to this, to the handout?
What is that? What does it say on top?
It's I'll start with the...
Revenue. Okay.
That's not the first page. That's the second page. Revenue comprises of the government grant, which is 160. Other grants, sponsorships, and donations. These are mainly from donors, primarily of overseas donors, and a whole lot of others. And then we have what we call own income, which is made up of investment income, and sales, and admission fees. As I was explaining, that admission fees is money collected when people come to visit the garden. And the concept, as the CEO was saying, is also one of the main contributors to that revenue stream. So our revenue is at 338 million, and then other income is rent received. Rent is basically from restaurant concessionaires who operate our restaurant in most of our gardens. We collect a percentage of their turnover, and that's classified as rent received. And we also have our other income, which is made out of other smaller, like professional fees, that we rent of other institutions. So total income is standing at 350.7 million. And on the expenditure side, we have a personnel cost that is attributed to MTF, which is the core operations of the organization. And we also
have percentage of your cost of personnel.
Personnel in total would be about in the region of 70 plus.
Oh,
we're
an intellectual organization, so
a
lot of our scientists,
etc.
That's what generates most of our
people. And Chair, we might just, as the CEO also alluded to the fact that we are talking to national centers via the department to, you know, with a view to increase our bottom line. The government grant, because almost 90% of the grant that we get from the department actually only covers the personnel cost, and then we are left with really minimal to cover our operations, which we try to fund.
We have more money for more staff.
Not for operations, because the staff is already covered, and then we minimize our establishment. And it's not filled any vacant positions, it's actually frozen positions. So what we need is basically to cover our operations. And also we did a thorough analysis of our operation cost there. And we realized that almost 86% of our operation costs constitute what we call obligatory fixed costs that we cannot avoid. And a very small percentage then goes to variable costs which are easily controllable. So we have a lot of operating costs that must be funded. Hence, the need to get a, you know, some cash injection into the organization.
And staff, yeah.
750 plus minus. And that is including the CEO was just alluding to the fact that our staff, you have two main categories of in our staff. Which is our scientists who are really driving the research and, you know, the core mandate. And then we also have a number of staff members who are in admin, personnel, HR, IT, and then another component which is actually in the people who are the low excellence of the organizational structure, which are actually our garden workers who maintain the garden physically. So, Teddy, and then we continue with the expenses. We have the operating cost, which is 88.8 million, and then audit fees, which is split into external and operating and internal and external fees. That will also include some, particularly in internal audit, some services that we run that. And then finance cost, as you can see, share is quite a negligible figure because we don't basically borrow money to fund operations. And then depreciation of 12.7 is really a non-cash cash flow item, as you know. And then on disposal of assets and direct project expenses, which is another major component. Now with direct project expenses, expenditure, we, as I mentioned, that on the income side, that we also have grants and sponsors, and those are ring-fenced funds that we get given for specific projects. And so normally they are ring-fenced. Hence, we say our problem, our funding problem is mainly on the MTF side, which is for operational purposes. So, Chair, looking at the income minus expenses, we have an operating deficit of 5.3 million. And last year, you see in the previous year, And I also coming from the other previous year, we had 11.7 billion of a deficit. And then we instituted a lot of austerity measures, cost-cutting measures, in order to try to bring the expenses down, while at the same time we facing the risk of trying to deliver on the mandate. So we are really in that precarious position, but management is doing everything. The board is well appraised of the financial situation, and hence the approach, as we are taking the approach to we are approaching National Treasury via the department to see how we can fund the organization so that all operating costs, particularly the mandate, can be fully fulfilled. Because if you don't get any capital injection check, there is a risk that we would not be able to fulfill our funded mandate. So that is on the result, Chair. On
the nation. The Treasury know about them, does the Department know about them, and are there any obligations attached to them?
The Department and Treasury are aware. We do produce quarterly reports where we even there we don't consolidate like we've done in this case. On every quarter we produce an income statement for projects and the other ones for MTF. So they are well appraised of those. And contractually, most of these donors don't require that we should repay any funds back to them. And I think I can also mention that we have a track record of delivering on this project. And what we also do over and above
that. There are other conditions attached to it.
They are unconditional grants, yes. And what we do. We do definitely account for them. And I just wanted to mention that for each and every project, we have independent auditors who look at them and they give their audit report to the donors.
Just to say, for example, the Grafton project, a lot of the work we do there is a World Bank check funded, and that is audited independently to reflect it on our financials. We've just completed a major cake project on the same bond area of 8 years long, and we were considered to be one of the best implementers of those World Bank funds on the globe in terms of delivery, in terms of planning, in terms of financial management. So we've actually got a bit of a reputation around that. The reason why we've been encouraged to be the national implementing entity for the adaptation fund is really because we've got that reputation. But really, in the end, if the state develops an act such as the NEMBA Act, which gives SANBI roles to play, then the state must fund the basic delivery of that act. And that has been, I think, an issue since 2005 when the NBI became SANBI.
If you spend the whole budget on stock in your financial officer set, and if you look at your personnel costs, the whole grant from government, plus another 10 million is spent on stock. So it's right to say to government you must fund these projects and these mandates, but if you spend the whole budget on stock.
Ironically, the increase in the expertise of staff has an increase in the ability to attract funds from donors. So we looked at a graph that we developed about when we did increase the expertise of staff, we increased the attraction from donors. So we have increased our project funds. But there are fundamental areas of work, for example, expansion of gardens, which I think the state should support. It is a people-based
institution. You're not convincing me, but I'm saying to you, you're just avoiding the question. I'm saying to you, you want to get the whole grant spent on stock money, and then say to the state, when it comes to gardens and others, well, now you must fund that. The whole idea of having a budget is to get it and cut it to all in their stock. So you made your choices in a certain direction. I'm going to ask the department why they've allowed it to happen like that, because you're clearly telling me there's a problem with funds elsewhere now. But be that as it may, I mean, you know, until you deal with that issue, I'm not going to get much sympathy. As good as work as you are, as brilliant as you may do here, the problem is if you then spend all that money on stock, and it may well be a month, given a judgment whether it's good or bad.
No, no, just
the point is, what I'm trying to say is that, I mean, if any other unit comes here and tells us they spend their whole budget on personnel, I mean, we'll have the same view about it.
That's
so I think that's the issue you need to have a bit of a look at. And then, you know, the easier to debate. But if you're already overspending with 10 million of grants again, just on personnel costs, that may be part of what you need to look in this year, and the strategic way of dealing with stuff is whether all that's necessary.
No.
Maybe there will be money elsewhere, and next time you have a staff that leaves their post, and may do something on the fill it, so that can be a lot of money. The staff salaries you pay, are they turned to the government, the fee structure, because you fall under CFMA and so on?
In addition, we have chosen to use the DPSA levels of salary. We haven't gone the other route back to practicing. We've gone with the DPSA. So we use exactly the same staff structure as national government.
Okay. All right. Let's leave that debate. I'm sure some of the members will ask questions on that. The other page, just tell us about the other page. Have you covered everything there, the one that starts with assets?
The assets, no, I haven't done it down to the extent.
You've got a qualified or unqualified support?
Yeah, we've been getting qualified support to the audit for this year that is just in that we're still under audit. The audit is in progress.
The previous one is
unqualified.
Have there been any major issues raised on this new one?
Yeah, I think the issue of funding, the AG is beginning to raise concern about the borrowing process, and because of the financial situation. But as far as control, but consent, compliance is concerned, we don't have any issues.
Good. Okay, tell me the assets page.
On the assets,
what are the major issues?
The major issue, Chair, would be that accumulate maybe towards the bottom net assets, which is your accumulated surpluses. Your accumulated surplus is made up of the funds that you have received. It would be sort of like your capital. So as you look compared to last year, you see there's a decrease, which is actually almost equal to the deficit that we are experiencing. So it shows that there's a decline in retained.
Where is the reserve?
It's sort of a reserve, yes. If it was
so you've got 124,000 million tax away income.
But this is also primarily attributed to funds that are committed for projects. So it's not purely a reserve as in the case of a normal private company.
I mean, of course you'll say that I've got 20 projects that are not being funded, so ultimately this covers the 20, but it doesn't cover the money you've stashed away somewhere.
We are committed funds.
Where have you stashed it away? In a bank account?
Oh.
Where is it?
It's a commitment going forward for projects, for commitments in projects that it was committed. And our projects, while the spectacular ones are internationally funded, actually the major funders are other departments of government.
Give me a bit of credit. Every year you've got a surplus. Last year was 129, now it's 124. Now last year you said the same thing. This is money for projects.
It's committed.
So I'm trying to work out what are you saying.
Let me give you an example. We would receive a 3-year set of money for working for Wenton. And we would make an agreement with the CPWC about where we're going to be doing the work, and therefore the plan and the expenditure going forward is committed funds that we will still have to expend.
We've only spent 5 million.
No,
I'm trying to ask you, there's this circle sitting there. You're telling me how much money you need. You're asking the treasury for more money. You're telling me this is for project, and then you spend 5 million this year. Now, I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to work out this genius plan you've got.
Okay, it's not a surplus. It's committed funds. Those are committed projects, but we have decreased them because of our operating loss. That's why
they're committed, but you're only spending 5 million from year to year, at least the 2 years we've got here.
No, Chair, when you look at the income statement, what is spent, indirect operating expenses, we spent this year 80, last year it was 90. Which is in the income statement. That's what we spend on projects. Actual expenditure.
Okay, go ahead.
And then on our cash care, on the current assets, you will realize that we have a decrease in cash. Cash in the bank, cash and cash equivalent. Last year we ended the year with 62 million, and this year we're ending with 25 million. And that can also be attributable to the fact that the donations have actually declined drastically.
That's not your World Cup hospitality.
No, we only spent 97,000 last year to buy T-shirts for the staff, which have actually our corporate T-shirt but just we use them for another color, and it has both with the South African emblem as well as the Selby emblem. So we did not buy any tickets.
CEO, I think I need a breakdown of this. Separate the donations. Because the way you're presenting it, for example, now you're showing us that there's been a 40 million decrease in cash. And you say the reason for that is that you're not getting the donor funding anymore. That worries me if you say something like that. So I think you need to send us a breakdown of the grant and all the sales and stuff in one, and the donor money in one, and show us how it's been spent and so on. So we can have a clearer picture of it. Compliance with governance framework. That hasn't been presented, but just have a look at that. Because I wanted to ask CEO, is there any reason that we don't have members from the board here? Or do we come on?
I do know that some of my colleagues have brought their members, their board members. We haven't. There's no reason why we didn't.
Because the board is from an account, so it's the board. Yeah. And clearly, they do it through the CEO and so on. But the board must be here. I really have to find it very problematic. But at least not some of them. I'm not saying all of them. You don't need to spend money like that. But the chairperson should be here. But I find it very problematic if you don't have board meetings. There's also been a lot of, let me get to that next. Right. I think those are all the issues. Dr. Kalyan?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I have several questions, but my first question would be simply this. Who is your target market? and how do you reach them? You referred, madam, to universities that you depended upon to do your researches. Which other departments do you work in collaboration with? Or entities, for example, do you outsource research to the NYC, the HSRC? And does that generate any income for you? Going back to my question in terms of the target market, and excuse me, but this is the first time I'm listening to a presentation of this nature, and you tend to use acronyms that we have no idea what you're talking about. But going back to my target market, what is a red line for butterflies, and who are we targeting that to? Is it about protected species, and it's only for people who are interested in butterflies?
Mm.
You made no reference to health and biodiversity in your presentation.
Sorry?
You made no reference to health and biodiversity in your presentation. May I ask why? Going back to the staff, garden staff, I thought that the municipalities had employed staff there. I was at the Botanical Gardens in Durban, which I think is one of your projects, and my understanding is that last week on Sunday, and my understanding is, what is the role with your relationship with municipalities and funding for your staff? Again, an acronym, you see the gold at Chelsea. I don't know what that means. Bandwidth constraints. You're working with the Department of Science and Technology with regard to bandwidth constraints, but what about the new proposals with the Department of Communication? What is your relationship with them? Is Sandy part of the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment? You're working for your wetlands project, you're working for projects will be transferred to a unit in the DEA, as I understand. How far is that project going? What is its impact on you? You know, what does it mean for you? And then, lastly, you think you would like to manage the Global Fund for Climate Change. Maybe I didn't quite get that. I couldn't find it in the presentation, but you made that comment once the presentation was closed. What does that mean, and why would you want to do that?
Let me just get clarity. Most of the staff does collection of information and research and things. And then you've got the botanical garden. The botanical garden is the only kind of operations you have where, as you say, you get your hands dirty. The other is research room. Now, I'm asking this question because one of your issues says we coordinate. One of your seven, you say we coordinate we coordinate programs. What do you mean by the coordinated? Are the programs run by the department and you provide information, or do you actually run the program? The third strategic goal. So just give me clarity about that, that you actually run those projects. Is it a question of getting hands dirty there, or is it the department doing that and you providing the intellectual backup which they seem to lack, according to the model? I don't think, because it's true. Then I also want to know, where do you say policy made and by whom on issues of biodiversity? Is the department, do they have a policy plan for biodiversity and you implement that, or do you, your board, make the policy? I can see that the department approves your strategic plan and so on, but that's after the event. I'm trying to work out exactly where policy, in your view, is made. Then this data system you have, maybe you could expand a bit. I'm interested to know how big that data base is. I mean, aware of the situation. On the other hand, Dr. Fong,
thank you, Chairperson. True to the CFO, this report, you say you were that his financial report is totally unqualified.
Yes.
Because if he's unqualified, I don't know if we haven't received any audit journalist report and comment. How is unqualified? If from the your statement inside, because you say your staff cost is a lot, but I don't know how many percent is cost of your staff in your budget. How many percent? Because from your beneficial for this employee is already the cost. I think is 150 million. If you from your case. From your cash flow inside, your ratio to the committee is the employee benefit is 151 million. So I think it's the chairperson also highlighted for the staff issue, but in need for your more detail to the committee. But my question is for your audit external fee and the internal fee. From the 2010 and 2011 is a big difference. For example, for the audit fee for external audit is 2010 is 1.2 million. Now this year is 1.8 million. Why you increase the 600,000? Then from the inside, the internal fee, you from the 1.1 million is less to the 400,000. So I need to know what reason, because your income has got more income, and you know increase the more the employee. Then it is what is the bigger difference from here? And your financial cost is from the 2 million come down to the 400,000. So if from this one your financial the deficit, you show this one is only for the. That's 5 million. Since last year, 7 million. But you still need a lot of money from the government grant. So I see that your income is like you say, this is the garden, this is your garden. Your admission fee, you only receiving the 26 million. Same the last year. Not too much different. So what for your promotion and from the your pocket, like the first speaker said. What is your target from your mission? So I think it is your operation cost that you say the cost 86%. Then your staff is cost, I don't know. I need your answer is your staff cost how many percent for your budget. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Question. To know the clarity, how much of your budget is allocated for operational and will be sufficient for the current year. I want to know how are some of the challenges encountered in your program on combating wildlife crime.
My question is on the donors, the donor funds and the investment income. Chairperson, I want to know what is this donor used for? Is it used for payment of staff or used for purchase or whatever? I need a clarity on that. And also on the investment income, we've got 144 million. Is this money coupled with the money that they get from the department to give some other functions or still in the bank? That's what I want from you. And on the civilian part, vital that the drainage really is a concern almost every year in this community. That this drainage is taking place at the city. At the city is where we find the drainage. Why will you go to those municipalities and those government buildings in the rural areas to implement this drainage?
One ex-employee was the CFO of this organization and was the CFO when I arrived as CEO. Within a month and a half, I identified mismanagement and fraud. We took him through he's Mrs. Singh. We took him, Mrs. Singh. We took him through due process with an independent chair. He was dismissed on a number of grounds through the independent chair. He appealed, the chair of the board then took him through another process and he was found still to be guilty of those charges. He took us to the CCMA, we went through the CCMA and the CCMA also found him guilty of those charges. Eventually, chair, on the grounds that I don't think it's appropriate for public entities to sue somebody for criminal injury and malicious attacks, I personally took him through a process because most attacks were on myself, and indeed I won the case in the High Court, and he has to now pay me for all my legal costs as well as a small amount for criminal injury. So what else can one do on malicious case? The other person who it might be a Ms. Zondo who is was a union representative at the organization. She was charged with various things. Again, we went through an independent chair. We consulted with the union. The union engaged with us. The independent chair, through due process, agreed that she was guilty and she was duly dismissed in January of this year. Mr. King, by the way, was dismissed some 3 years ago. Ms. Zondo then took us through the CCMA, and the CCMA also throughout the case.
Is there another lady?
And there might be Ms. Coyle.
Otherwise,
then it's you. then it's a new person, and then maybe you should hand, you should inform me in some kind of way. Or
I
know
this person also mentioned Singh and some, but I think they have their own problem. It says Singh
Rondo.
Singh and Rondo. What's the other person?
Coyle.
K-O-Y-O,
but I don't think that it, that it is that. I think it's Rondo or Singh.
Right, I think what you must do in those cases is just give us a short report on all the steps that have taken place and so on. So you just have it on record.
But I just want to tell you that this matter of Singh has been going on for about 2 years. He has written to everybody, including the National Intelligence Agency, the National Prosecuting Agency, the police, the DPSA, the minister, the president.
I understand that, but that's why we go to democracy. Democracy is our menu. Much easier to have a dictatorship. You just give orders every day and you make sure people do it and they don't shoot. Much easier. But democracy is our menu. Democracy means you first have the right to be stupid. You have the right to be stupid. You have the right to be careful. Then, of course, you have the right to complain to as many people as you like. And obviously, members of parliament are prime targets when it comes to government entities and institutions, because people feel this is a place where they should be able to hear their message. That is why I'm giving you a chance to be able to respond to it and put on record what is the case. If this other lady is someone you haven't mentioned, I will then give those matters separately for her. Okay. On to the others.
Harvard Marcus, in terms of our garden, we are obviously always concerned that our black market has not grown. And one, and unlike the national parks that actually track the demographics of their visitors, we don't. So, but we feel quite obviously that the National Botanical Garden, by their very nature, they are urban and peri-urban institutions anyway, that we have, that we must do all we can to encourage lower income and black market participants in our garden. And one of the key ways of attracting that market growth, is to make sure that the events within the garden are the kinds of events that would attract that kind of market. So another reason why we are really adamant, we do not want to increase the fee into the garden, because it would take away the leisure and pleasure of those gardens for low income people. So a lot of the work we do is to encourage low income South African citizens into market. So that's our target, but obviously we want everybody, regardless of race and income, to regard the garden as a place for leisure and pleasure. But as I say, we are too concerned about growing our target market in those previously not in the target for National Botanical Gardens. In terms of our research, obviously the information...
Is your problem there that you, the kind of event?
Which is why I mentioned...
If you want working class people to go there, you need to put events that attract them. I mean, the only things we had here in Kirstenbosch, which I've been to a few of them and I enjoyed very much, particularly on the summer day in Cape Town. But of course, I mean, if you look at the audience, it's completely white and it's all like me. And a few children that are unfortunately dragged along with their parents, so they have a young face. But I, you know, I do think, I mean, if you're going to have Sting and, you know, gardeners who else there, then clearly you're not going to attract audience other than the white audience, and particularly at the price, basically, you get crippled at least for a year.
I don't.
So I really think that around this issue, if you want to, that's your target. If you're serious as you say, firstly, don't increase your price at the gate, and maybe for there's a possibility to make it more people that don't have the money easier to go. And then the other thing is the event. I mean,
which is why I talked about Vera. I don't know if you
Chairman, I just follow up for the your comment there to the CEO. He said it's a low income, depending to the not the break market. But if you say the low income, you can find all the school children, school students, to come and visit your garden for education. This way you can get the low income, and a lot of students come and visit your garden. It's okay if you get the low income. I don't know why you say there's no market for the bread.
Sorry, Chair, we have, I mentioned in my presentation that, that we engage with school children all the time. We have a concession fee for school children. We have a free Tuesday for pensioners. We don't have flat rates across all the gardens. We try and have an understanding of the kind of equivalent attraction in those towns like Bloemfontein, in Pietermaritzburg, etc. And we try to compete in terms of an attraction in those towns. So a lot of that thing we're doing, and I really wish that this new portfolio committee would come and come and visit some of our gardens and see some of the events. Lira is a very attractive and a black artist that we for the first time played in Pretoria Gardens. We started a winter concert garden, and for the first time we had a substantial group of black visitors on a Sunday, and we hope to continue on that this way. In terms of the target market with research, obviously our key target market are scientists and researchers who take our information and provide support and information in decision making, whether it be in the private sector or in the public sector. I think what we really rather ambitiously want to do is also to provide information for citizen scientists so that they can also be able to go into our information system and for example, understand the ecosystem that they live in, understand where threatened species are and threatened ecosystems. So it is an ambitious endeavor, but we are part of a global organization called the Global Biodiversity Information Facility. A lot of the work we do is within the node that the South African node which can be a host. And their aim is also to both have veracitable scientific information for scientists and professors, etc., but also to popularize science much more globally. And so we're all working towards access to information to school students, secondary school students, university students. So in terms of our target market, we're really looking at two types of people. And in many ways, the organization is two types of organizations. One is running an estate, a tourism facility, a place for leisure, pleasure, windows into biodiversity, education, etc., and the other is around policy, research, information provision as an organization. So one of the policies that we have is a thing called a managed network. We're a developing country. Our science capacity is stretched to the end. Universities get grants from NRF, for example, to do research. Institutions like MRC and CSIR and ARC also get grants. So one of the patterns that we have is to say, let us work together to develop a song sheet of what sort of research is needed for the key priorities of South Africa, rather than all of us competing for those funds. So we have a close relationship with NRF, and with the Department of Environment Affairs, we have put to work to choose the NRF a kind of guide on what kind of research they should fund, and therefore we have that relationship. But we have a relationship with Free State University, University of Pretoria, very big relationship with UCT and UWC. We've got a relationship with Port Hare around the GMO work that we do, and with University of Venda on some of the greening work that we do. And just to take honorable member
Zembe in Limpopo and Falkeni in Eastern Cape are two rural greening programs that we've done very successfully. But again, if we do not get the money for it, it's one of the things we need to cut. We have to, it is a balancing act. We have to make decisions. One of the decisions we have to make this year, and you mentioned the high staff that we have, one of the decisions we have to make this year was to cut out staff by half in our education program. Ironically, we still delivered as much education as we did with half the staff. We cut the staff. Not that we went to a redundancy phase. I think this is a very inappropriate time to have redundancies in this state. Rather, we transferred them to do a project which was funded from outside, the Emerging Weeds Program, which we do for water affairs, looking at emerging weeds and having a rapid response in dealing with emerging weeds. So, university relations, I think it's not, but more information we can provide you on that.
Those are emerging weeds, not the weeds of the Dhaka Park.
the medicinal uses of Dhaka. I wanted to just say that one has to really identify the priority of the priority. I wanted to add a picture here of the work that we've been doing on the impact of climate change, and there are two areas that you might be interested in. One is the impact of climate change on health, and the impact on the footprint of the Anopheles mosquito. As you know, the north of South Africa has got malaria, but really it doesn't come as far as Pretoria. What we are predicting that as the east gets wetter and warmer, and the southwest gets drier and hotter, that the footprint of the Anopheles mosquito will move downwards, down to the Gauteng area. And therefore, we are advising the health department and our health sector that therefore strategies need to change. The other work that comes out of the work we did with the Second National Communication Report on Climate Change is looking at the cholera outbreaks that are linked with the unusual floods and unusual weather patterns that we see as part of an ongoing change. And I have a whole presentation on the impact of climate change and the work that we've done on impacts of climate change on the construction sector, on the health sector, on agriculture. Some of the findings on agriculture are extremely interesting, where temperature change and water variability, rainfall variability, will have major impacts, particularly on dryland farmers and particularly on small-scale, low-resource farmers. And this is just a kind of window into some of the research. We have produced the Second National Communications Report, Chair. It is a scientific document. It's going to be looked at by Cabinet soon, within the next month, and it will be part of our presentation at UNFCCC COP17 about the state of South Africa and the impact of climate change on our country. Durban is not one of our natural botanical gardens. We run the herbaria in that garden, but otherwise it is a Durban municipal garden. We have a relationship through a managed network with a network of gardens in the country, such as the one in Johannesburg and in other towns. What we are working together with those gardens is that they too can become mini indigenous gardens and become refuges for threatened species and threatened plants. But many municipalities, I'm afraid, do not have the ability or the money to run their municipal gardens. And I really do think that the opportunity for local communities to have access to an indigenous garden for leisure and education is lost by the fact that many municipalities either don't prioritize it, or they don't have the capacity to do it, or they don't have the money to do it. So one of the areas of work which I mentioned earlier in our municipal program is to work with municipalities in their green spaces and assisting them with their green spaces. bandwidth constraints. SAMRIN, which is the national body, actually is working with all the departments and institutions, both the providers and the users, in developing a national network. And we were very pleased to be able to engage with them, because they are funded, they've got a national vision, and we needed to put our concerns and our needs into the network, and we now work with them. So which means that in terms of investment, we ourselves didn't have to invest in some of that bandwidth. And I think that is an efficient and effective use of state funds to work together on an existing system. Funnily enough, my scientists took an age to understand that notion. People always want to have their own thing, almost, you know, standalone. And in fact, it makes so much more sense to go with SAMRIN. We've been engaged with the MEAs, the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment, particularly with CSIR, and we've been, some of the work that CSIR does has been the work that we've provided. We work very closely with CSIR on a number of those things. But as you know, the work of TBIT, the ecosystem assessment, global assessment program that the UNEP ran, and the MEA project, the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Program, together they've recommended a body now similar to the IPCC of the UNFCCC. Sorry, I'm so full of acronyms, and I hope you will stop me. But the International Panel for Climate Change, now there is an International Panel for Biodiversity called the IPBES. International Panel for an Ecosystem Services is the last one. And we are key players in that work as well. In fact, we gave the keynote address at the first keynote address for capacity building at the first IPBES meeting a month ago. So we're key involved in that. The Working for Wetlands program, yes, we had a meeting with the NRM and what they call now the National Resources Management Facility Agency, which at the minute is a branch of DEA, but probably by next year will become a government agency. We had a meeting with them. We feel we run it well. It's an award-winning program, our Working for Wetlands, but obviously we would come under the edges of the NRM going forward. The Global Fund for Adaptation, it's part of the UNFCCC, that's the UN Climate Change Convention. They have set up a fund called the Adaptation Fund. It's a global fund. You need to have national implementing entities in country. At the minute, there's only two other national implementing entities on the globe. Essentially, you can access funds for projects that are to do with adaptation. And because we did the second national communications report, where it's about what is going to happen to our country and therefore what should be the adaptation going forward, we work with DEA, not the biodiversity branch, but the other branch, the climate change branch, in developing a strategy for the country. The department cannot be the implementing entity. It has to be an independent entity. Also overseen by the Auditor General, which we are, and with a reputation for using the money well, which we have. So that's the reason why we're going for that adaptation fund, a national implementing entity. Do we get our hands dirty beyond the NDGs? Yes, where we get our hands dirty are on some of the greening programs that we do. I mentioned earlier.
Do you have the government's support for that?
Getting our hands dirty beyond the
adaptation.
In fact, the government is pushing us to do it.
Yeah, I think the worry is that, not particularly of you, the worry is that your organization has built with biodiversity, and adaptation is much, much broader. And I'm not too sure that the immediate thing, a precise one, is that you're going to have to change and get much broader than you are now. So then the I think it should be consolidating. But this is my group view. And I think that's probably the reason Dr. Kalyan has asked the question. Because clearly, as far as adaptation on biodiversity is concerned, absolutely, I think you should be able to take that way. And the department should. You know, for adaptation in the trade and industry department, adaptation everywhere else, I just think it becomes. So I think that's the worrying thing. And that's why I asked the question whether the government is supporting it.
And in fact, the department is encouraging there to be a national implementing entity so that we can access those funds. And I think that maybe after this we should go back and say, are we the... I can't think of any other institution in the environment sector that could, but maybe they need to rethink it. So, yeah, we work with screening programs, and I mentioned Fafini and Bembe, for example. And we get our hands dirty in those working for Western programs and those.
But can go back to that response. You see, the problem is within Parliament, within the portfolio committee here, and within Parliament itself, we are finding that that the whole approach to the climate change, to COP17, is rather fragmented. And the whole, also now you talk about accessing the global fund for adaptation. The money is there, but there isn't a mechanism to access it so that it can be used. And as a result, even the donor funding that we refer to grows over is lost because of this. So are you saying that you might be the right mechanism to be able to access in order to carry out the project? And I say this tongue in cheek because you, when you spoke earlier, you said the money is limited to budget, but yet we're running at a deficit, so we're not, you know, on the ball with it. And it's just money is not as fighting with all this.
I think the point taken by my colleague from GA is here. We have gone some way into making the application at the request of here. And the very questions that you are asking are the questions that the panel is asking. So it's an interesting idea. But the deeper issue is the institutional arrangement around climate change.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue that I don't think I should comment on. It, but I think it's a point to take. The policies are made by the department. We provide information, and obviously are greatly influential in the policy, but in the end the policy is made by the department.
What do? They bring out a framework after discussion with you, and why is the department not giving me that framework? My question relates to the problem. Why don't I have a framework in front of me?
And the biggest framework is the NDCAP, which is the National Biodiversity Strategic Action Plan, and its 5-year cycle. And that really is the big plan in the sky that we work against. And so, for example, our research agenda that we're working with all institutions and research to get them all on the same song sheet really is driven by the NDCAP identified priorities and the 5-year plans that we have. Otherwise, it would be all over the place and everybody would be doing blue sky research.
But you see, the problem, can the department listen? They probably listen to me. You see, the problem I have is that I asked the question about policy, firstly, whether I needed to get clarity exactly where we all see this to be. But you see, unless we've got the policy in front of us, I can't hold this energy to account. But if I say to Dr. Abrams, show me what research you're doing on the CR fits into the policy, I can't do it. Now, maybe the other members have had it previously, I don't know, but you see, the problem is the department starts thinking. When we started these hearings about the entity, I said, you guys must think about these things. What it is do we need? What problems are there in any entity? I'm not interested in the day-to-day running of the entity. That's their problem. Is there a problem in Sandy with money, or isn't there a problem? They think they may have a problem. I've not heard anything from the department. Is there policies? How do I hold the family to account if I don't have the policies in front of me that government has given within which they have to operate? So I think we must think a bit about these things. Eh? You must empower this committee to do its work properly. The problem is for me, I say when I have these hearings, I say I want to see the strategic plan, I want to see the financial statement, I want to see your budget and so on, because that's the kind of thing that drives me. But, you know, I think we must put... Think about this. Ishan?
Chair, I'm advised that in the brown book that was given to members in March already, there's a copy of the NDSAP. And that's the framework.
What brown book? Where? I haven't got one.
It was circulated to all members, Chair.
Come, give me my key. Do you want to go to my office?
Chair, I'll research.
Don't find it for me in the office.
I'll research it today.
All my environment and other books are right next to my computer. All my law books are on my shelf. And everywhere else there's piles of papers, which I know is each file. I don't have a book like this. This was brought this morning. This morning I said to my to the secretary, I said, didn't I say I want a copy of every piece of legislation that covers each of these entities? He says, yes, Chair. He says, but it's in a book, Chair. I say, what book? He says, and then she brings that book to me and puts it right here. Take the key. Can someone go to the environment? Come here. Take my keys. Don't find it in my office.
It's like
a doorstop, I think. Not a doorstop. And go find that book for me. Tell me where I have the keys. I'm now hearing an M46. And you say the policy is in here?
Yeah. Not in there. That's the only legislation that is coming with
Canada. But now, where is the policy? You say in the brown book. Which brown book? Not a brown book.
So the glossy covered document here. I'll bring you a copy here.
Alright, go ahead with on.
The data system, you asked about the data system, Chair. I think I indicated that we are part of the global biodiversity information facility. We're one of the nodes, and that the best place to see the information that we produce is a click on our website called the Biodiversity Advisor. You will be able to download the information. For example, if you want to buy a plot of land in the Eastern Cape, you'll be able to download right down to whether that's an area that's in an ecosystem that's threatened, whether it's got threatened species, the topography, the water. It's a very detailed overlay of a lot of information. We have engaged with the mining department on this matter, saying there we have what will be a 20 million rand investment in information. We never invested that much. Our people work for little money and smart. And we have produced what is essentially a 20 million rand worth information system for mining licensing, for them to be able to look at biodiversity information, sensitive biodiversity information, in order to assist them in making the decision. It was a very interesting discussion we had with the DG of mining when he saw our system, because they've just come from Canada, where the Canadians said it would cost 20 million rand to invest in order to make. So return of investment, I think, is really important, and I think you have to have good people to have that kind of return of investment. The information is extremely, extremely good.
We cover all information, or the gaps in what we have today.
The basis of our information is the major work that we did some years ago on the vegetation of South Africa, the vegetation being the foundation of
of all our information, and then we overlaid issues like certain species, certain ecosystems, the water work that we've been doing, the alien invasive work that we've been doing, and we overlay it so that when you as a user come along, say as a developer, which is why that EIA information was so useful to do, instead of getting it offload out there, we actually put it into the system. So you'll be able to go through the plot of land that you want to develop into a housing estate and be able to get a lot of information for free before you make a decision even to go there. And that, for all of us, is cutting the cost of doing business in South Africa quite enormously. And cutting the view, I think, that people have that our environmental legislation is expensive. It really is about the user being able to get free information and to make a decision very early on in the information chain about whether they even go there or not. And that's really our aim with some of that information. But there's lots of other information as well there. And as I said, our biodiversity advisor is going to be displayed in Buenos Aires this year as a global best practice for information. An information system for users. And it's all in the aim of hoping that everybody will see environment and biodiversity as not a break to development, but a...
That's the developmental side, but now if I wanted to do something on anything about that, will I be able to go there and I'll find that information?
Yeah.
In terms of development, in terms of research, or whatever.
UCT has been collecting the avian demographic unit of many, many decades of some of the best bird information. And the bird migration, as you might know, has now become an indicator of climate change. And it's invaluable information. One of the things about the aviation unit is that, like all scientists, they keep their hands around the pole of the information. They refuse to let it. Eventually, we pried their fingers away from that pole, and now it's accessible to anybody. So, for example, Len Angelo, who just retired as a professor of demography at UCT, said to me the other day, can you believe it, a young Mexican woman is now going to do a PhD on the migration of birds into Southern Africa using his data. They always call it my data, it's my data. And it's really quite a slow and interesting process in talking with scientists and talking with institutions and saying, the benefits of your data being out and open and accessible for young scientists, for people to be able to go in to use the data, to write PhDs, to write papers, will mean that there'll be a synergistic growth of scientific inquiry. Whereas the old method has been you keep your data. In fact, we've been at a fight with our own scientists in the Hub area. They like to keep their data. And when you ask them, well, let's make it accessible to all, they say, but I've still got three papers to write out of that data. But you still, you know, they're 80 or they're 70 already and they've got still three papers. And it's really a mind shift change, I think, in the way we deal with data.
Are there databases outside of your school?
No, we've engaged with all institutions with databases. Either they are coming in or they will come in. It's been a journey.
We're going to look at it in July.
Yes, it'll be good. In fact, we're going to give you a presentation, Chair.
You will. That's a fun one.
No, it's an amazing system.
You want to have a look at that, by the way. With me. We'll be able to have a look together.
Honourable member will ask about wildlife crime. We are, our scientific authority work that I talked about will be using that budget line on wildlife crime to be providing the monitoring and evaluation research that's required for prioritization in the wildlife crime system. It's the scientific authority work that we do. Okay, just before my colleague answers the issues around finance, essentially what we have in the organization is everybody on the public service system. We are not public servants, but we use the public service system.
And one of the agreements we have with our union is that when there are increases of wages in the public service, we accept a lot of the rules and regulations and policies of the public service system. The only indicator that we are not public servants is that we have our own pension fund, the Sandy Pension Fund. Otherwise, we essentially use the same system. So, 2 years ago, Mr. Chair, the public service, the National Treasury advised us to put aside 6.5% for increasing wages. That year, the public servants negotiated up to a 13.5% increase in wage. When you look at the history of the increase of the MTF-funded staff, it really has been the nascent started, the growth started at that moment. We have staff that are funded from the grant, and then we increasingly, and I think this is going to be the future of an organization like ours, is that we increasingly have project-funded staff. What we've negotiated is that they would also be part of the public service system, but they have 3-year contracts as long as those projects are, as we've got income. And we see in a few years' time that our MTS stock will have shrunk quite enormously and our project staff has grown. And that really is what's happening here to many institutions, at least an institution like ours. So we have not been appointing new people. We have been shifting MTF-funded staff to projects for 3 years. We have been allowing old people to retire and not filling their posts. In fact, when people do retire, old or young, we have not been filling their staff. We are stabilizing the staff complement, but in the end, to do our job, we must get project funds to do and to appoint people who are experts on those projects to do the job.
Do you contribute any more than the state contributes to each member?
We've adopted the same conditions as the we have adopted the salary structures of the PFA, so we're contributing No, Chair. Actually, I was going to one of the answers why our audit fee has gone up. We've had to do an actuarial evaluation of our pension fund and medical aid, and that actually we ended up spending.
But
more.
It's different, but the same. You've got the same principle that applies to the.
Yes.
Now, I just wanted to make sure that deficit is in line there.
I think that the other question, Chair, is around the financials, the audit is that we are still in the audit process, and actually today is a statutory day for us to submit to the AG and to National Treasury. But I said
in
those
cases you cannot give us the previous year.
Well, we said the previous one was unqualified.
Yeah, but I'm saying you should give it to us.
We have submitted, but in the financials that we circulated, we do have comparison.
My instructions was, but maybe it hasn't gone through properly. My instructions was all those things I wanted: annual report, strategic plan, financial statement, auditor's report. All those. If you don't have the present one, you should give us at least the last one. But obviously the instructions didn't go through properly. But just send it to us, that audit statement, so we at least have a copy of the last one. When you have the new
one, I will put now.
When you have the new one, just send the new one also to us.
We'll make sure it's ready to submit. Just on the issue of, I think that the CEO has already alluded on the issue of the budget for staff, our personnel cost constitutes 76% of our total operating expenditure on MTF, and then But on, however, on the project, the personnel cost makes up 20%. So we would also like to have it, you know, the other way around in terms of, as I feel, says, we no longer employ more people, but we also try to shift people from MTF into projects where they can obviously have a perfect fit in terms of the project deliverables. The increase in the external audit fees, Chair Abafalun mentioned the fact that we've had to do actuarial valuations, which actually extended the budgeted 42 hours, which was necessary. And then there was also a specific focus on performance information, and I think even this year it's still going to be a focus. And there was, again, a more...
The standard also has been invited, okay?
For the KPI?
The actuarial on the pension and the medical aid, when you got that all back from the auditors and from the auditors,
yes.
And everyone's happy, then just send that to us as we have the record.
We will do so, Chair. And then there was also a specific audit, more focused on supply chain management.
That's important.
That's very important.
And we've got a clean audit.
Particularly with water affairs. You know, we don't call it the water affairs.
Yeah.
That's a particular weakness of water affairs.
Yeah. Chair, I think
procurement code.
I might just say, because our audit is normally conducted here in Cape Town on the, because most of our finances are run from Cape Town. But last year we also had to send two auditors up to Cape Town where the supply chain records were kept, because not only did they audit that current year, but they also went like 3 years back, because some of the projects, the tenders were awarded over they run over a 3 year period. So they actually had to do a more in-depth testing of our system. And despite that, we still got a clean audit.
3 years of cleaner.
Yeah. And then I think the other issue that is related to the question that you asked,
please keep it like
that. Definitely going to keep it. The other issue that led to the increase in the external audit fees was the issue of the whistleblowing. I think there's a question that you raised earlier on about the staff, people who came. So the auditors said once they get any whistleblowing about any matter, the auditors are duty bound to investigate. So they also spent some time actually looking at that. That's why the audit fees increased. We've really agreed with them this year. Our actuarial valuations, we made sure that the actuaries from our own mutual who's running our pension fund, and that of the auditors, that they should meet upfront, agree on assumptions and the figures, so that we don't necessarily spend more time. So that we're still trying to cut down on those expenses. The admission.
Can you say that there for the in past answer about the ex employees that the AG has agreed that those methods are not going to have any money spent on it? So as we are to actually report today is around the closure of that method that you mentioned earlier around the ex employees.
On the investment income, it's actually only for investment income. It's made up of the interest that we make. When we get the government grant, we make sure that we invest in call accounts so that we can earn interest before salaries become payable. And we also do the same thing with all the projects, money funds. We always try to maximize and keep it to invest it, so that we can earn some interest. And the deficit, Chair, as I said, you know that last year we closed the year with 11.7, but we put measures in place to make sure that we kept on expenses. But this is directly related to underfunding, because there are things that I said are obligated to that we had to pay, electricity, things like that, to keep the organization going that we couldn't quantify. So we've had to spend there. Anyway, we still try to minimize it, and we still continue that to contain expenses.
Just to say, we don't accept donor funds for projects unless it serves our mandate and our corporate strategic plan. So for example, the work around biomes, let's say for example the grassland biome, it was our role to play, and I think we did ask that question also said, it was our role to investigate conservation, sustainable use and protection of a threatened ecosystem such as grassland. And we then applied to the World Bank for the funds to do it. And so we then do it with their funds. But it's our mandate. I think you asked the question, what do we use donor funds for? I think you asked, what do we use donor funds for? It is very important that one doesn't accept any money to do anything that's not within the mandated things to do. So for example, if we get money from foundations, it's around our schools program, money from individuals. Oppenheimer and Sons gave us a little bit of money because they want to assist us in the work we're doing with the with schools. So if it's not within the work that we're supposed to do, we don't accept it. And then what we do with it is we have programs and projects, and it is all reflected in our financials and all accounted through our financial system, and all reflected on our financial accounting system. And I wish, honourable member, there was money lying somewhere, but there isn't. We are in a very, very tight budget. To the extent that for the last 2 years, unlike other people in the public service, we have not received performance bonus.
Ah, good. I'm very happy about that.
Including myself.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I
mean,
honestly,
we have not received performance bonus. Including myself, despite the fact that in my contract that it wasn't actually a performance bonus, it was a contractual matter. But I feel that since my senior staff did not get performance bonus, I shouldn't get performance bonus either. That's been for 2 years. We can do no performance bonus for lower level staff for 1 year. But the second year we decided we must give performance bonuses. To not have performance bonuses at a lower level staff and below is really begin to undermine the organization and its effectiveness. So we did give performance bonuses to level 12 and below. But if level 12 and above,
I don't know how you give a performance bonus to a researcher. Very difficult to work out.
No,
your job is researching.
Not so difficult then.
You're researching, you write reports. Now we're going to give a bonus because you do your work.
No, excellence, global excellence. Bringing together a lot of organizations and institutions.
That's a researcher's job, I imagine. I hope that before any bonuses are given by any entity, now I've already asked this for the department, that those departments will table it with us. That doesn't only apply to you, department, it applies to any entity that gets one before they get bonuses. We want to hear about it. I want to see why people get bonuses. I'm totally opposed to bonuses in the civil service. I've never met real excellence in the civil service. All the work I've seen in the civil service is work that had to be done as part of the job description. You don't say, you get a salary, you get a certain check before you do your job. So please, department, any bonuses by any entity, I want to know it before it's granted. And all the principles you've raised with the department about bonuses must apply equally to the entities under you. Okay? At this stage, I'm very happy. This is not reflective on Sunday because I haven't given bonuses for 2 years. That's a good thing. Particularly a unit that got a deficit. It would look very bad if a unit with a deficit is a bonus. It's terrible. Okay? Hope that covers that. Any other issues?
issues answered.
All the issues answered? Everyone happy?
Yes.
Sorry, you didn't answer that question of mine unless I missed it. The one that, other than the botanical garden, are there any hand gathering projects that you actually run and get involved in?
I talked about our Working for Westerns program.
But that's from the donor funding.
Doesn't really matter. It's our people who do it. Wherever we got the money from, we get the money. In fact, in this case, we get the money from via the department, the EPWP fund, to do a renovation and upgrading of the equipment.
That's the one that's now going to move to the EPWP.
Well, my view is clear that it will be managed, and we will obviously take guidance from the NOM. We do it. It's an award-winning program. We've done it very well. I think there is a view that we shouldn't break what's fixed in the sense, but it's not yet done. It's not yet moved over, but it makes sense to be under a big part of it. And then we have our greening programs, and I mentioned to you Kalkeni and Zender, for example, and some of the greening work that we do, the education department does in greening in communities. And then we have the school greening program, which you might know you might have seen in the paper, some of the school greening programs that we do. And then some of the research, for example, says, I don't know what your definition of the hand dirty is, but the work that we do with the impact of GMOs is actually working with farmers and Free State University and Fortare in actually being involved with the planting and monitoring of the impact of GMOs on the surrounding environment. And we go do lots of field work in that place.
The problem I have, and I'm trying to get my head around it, is that we have a unit in the department that's responsible for the biodiversity. The chappy that was sitting on the left.
Shoni, yes.
But in the meeting that we had when you were counted and so on. Now, I'm trying to work out, if there is a unit like this, why more and more of their projects they move into standards. It's very standard for a particular reason. And if they want to tell me they want to extend its mandate and get involved in other things, then that's fine. But then they must decide where they want to do this. Tell that unit, I promise them I'm still going to engage them. I'm going to do it in July. I want some answers from them. Maybe it's not a bad thing that these things are being moved to Stanley because at least they've got a clean budget. Those are the parts and also has contact. But you know, my issue is I think I want clarity on where we're going to draw the line. Maybe Dr. Anderson has got a point when she starts saying, well, she hasn't said it, but it may be an implication, that if all these projects get moved elsewhere and they're getting dealt with by what is ostensibly a structure that really gathers information, does research, and then starts asking to run these projects and so on, all different ones that she's mentioned. I'm trying to think where we're going to draw the line. Because then I don't see a reason for, particularly if they're getting the same salary as the people in the department, why do we have a unit plus family? Starting to get completely mixed up. So I want to engage on this. You tell that head of whoever the DG is.
Okay,
one is getting a big buck. Send him.
Yeah.
Tell him I want to, he must put his thinking down. What the tasks are what they see the role of funding to be now and in the future, to what extent is going to increase from what it ostensibly is and be something else. If that is so, we can engage on it. It may be a good thing, it may be a bad thing. I'm not expressing a view one way or the other. But I want to engage on the issue that we're very clear then where things must be happening. Because as we start getting what's happening here, we'll get what we've got in the Department of Water Affairs. I've often said that the Department of Water Affairs is like a camel. A camel is an animal that was put together by a committee. It's a hump here, it's a bump there, it's a protruding thing there, it's a this. That's what a camel is. There's a lot of funny things on it. Now, the Department of Water Affairs is like this.
They get a project and they put it here, they put it there, they put it there, and later on there's no principle of where things are done in the department. It is just everywhere. Now, I don't want that to start happening in a department that's well run, that's efficient, that's got its finances sorted out, etc. And I want us to be clear on where these things are. And as I say, I want a very clear, you see, if you're creating entities outside of the department like Sunday and Sun Park and so on, I want a very clear mandate for what they do in the government. Okay? I've seen, for example, in other departments, particularly communication, where things like this happen, you start getting huge problems. Huge problems. When it starts going wrong. You start getting the wrong CFO, you start getting the wrong CEO, they start engaging you on a whole lot of things because they're now involved in projects. So I want this I want this to be very recorded very clearly with that BD. Okay? I want them to report where they are trained. Where they see the line drawn between this unit and Sunday. What do they see ultimately the projects and goals and things of Sunday are, okay? Right. Okay, we're leaving it at that. I'm not wanting any further discussion. Are those all the questions? All your questions answered? Any outstanding? Yeah, I think we need a small little paragraph just on each one of them so that we've got it on record what they are. So when I engage with the unit, I can properly engage them. Then on your database, we'll probably visit you in July, okay? To come and look at that database. All right, that's it. Thank you very much. Dr. Evans, I really think in future it must be recorded that I'm happy that no one from the board is here. And please and please for them to come and count. Even if there are 10 people, that's their responsibility. And there shouldn't be any shyness because these have got a clean report, so they should be happy to come. Okay? Obviously, in the end of the day, the board chair usually comes to us and says a few nice words, and then the CEO takes over and presents. But at least they're there to account and they hear what the committee is saying. So in their own work, you know, they and I have no engagement with the portfolio. So they don't know what our expectations are, what's worrying us, etc., etc. But they're not yet here. I'm sure you'll report it, but I mean, in the end of the day, they should really be here to hear. Okay, thank you very much for all your work and for reporting to us. As I said, this now will be an ongoing process. At least annually, but we can do it better, even more so. Let's take a small break, 5 minutes. I don't know where these questions are, but they're coming up there. Find them and see if you're back in 5 minutes, okay? Stand by for the next.
Oh.